Welcome to Tinfoil Helmets, your occasional spicy hot take roundup of the latest F1 rumours, with the most believable conspiracy theories to back them up. Everything here is researched carefully for hours to make sure it's totally founded in logic, reason, and truth. Or not. Who knows? Hi, I'm Dominic. I'm the British part of this Formula One podcast to make sure that we keep up the end of the bargain for American versus British sports hot takes. I work in tech like every other podcaster on the planet, but hopefully we'll bring something new here.
And I'm Andrew. I'm the other half who also works in tech part of this podcast. It's going to go great, and I should have thought of more things to say.
You know, that's how the cookie crumbles. Yeah.
All right, Dominic, let's start out. What are your thoughts from Bahrain? I thought it was an overall pretty great race, especially for the start of the season.
I'm not going to complain about the race, but it was basically the same as last season. Like, did we really need a three-month break to have this result? It seemed to me like we could have just kept going.
I mean, Aston Martin definitely would have wanted that three-month break with looking at their improvement in performance, which actually brings me to one of my first more takes from Bahrain. With Aston Martin having such an improvement, are we going to start to see the tanking for tunnel time, similar to what we've seen in other sports? Given I'm the resident American on this podcast, I will bring up baseball and teams tanking for high draft picks in baseball or in the NFL, where you also see teams tanking to get the number one draft pick in a certain season. Are we about to see Formula One teams start to give up everything on development and for the hopes and future success?
Do American sports really do that? Like, how do they strategize the point at which they tank it to get the draft? Like, do you start at the beginning of the season with that? Or is that like a thing you have to, you decide later in the season?
Usually after a couple weeks, if it's not going well and there's a good prospect coming up in the draft, you say, you know what? I don't think this is the year for us. And I just want to say, I grew up in Houston, and the Houston Texans did an amazing job last year of having the number one pick until they won in the last week of the season, giving themselves the second pick. So if you're going to tank for tunnel time, make sure you really throw away all those points, maybe like McLaren's doing, and not just, you know, go straight for the odd point here and there.
I was going to say, that's like the inverse Ferrari, right? Like, you build a great car, you set it all up, and you just throw it away at the last moment for no apparently good reason. See, I thought last year, I thought Mercedes were not tanking it, but they kind of came to a conclusion that maybe they should tank it so they get some more, you know, aero time. But what did they do? They had a great second half of the season, which, you know, they're not planning. They need to plan. This is a strategy game. Well, it's Mercedes. They don't know a lot about strategy, but, you know, maybe I'm being too harsh there. There's certainly no Ferrari.
Yeah, that's really a question of how far that zero side pod design can go, and maybe they found its limit.
They should rename it. It was the Blobfish, let's be honest. I mean, zero side pod gave them zero results at the end of the day. So, yeah. Name as you mean to go forward. You got any other spicy hot takes from Bahrain?
Oh, I just thought it was very great that Red Bull can go further faster on soft than Ferrari can on soft hard. What a tire muncher that Ferrari is.
I thought I was quite surprised by that, in that that was their problem last year. And yet again, did they, like, we have a plan. Let's make our car better. And what do? We make no difference. It's the same as last year. The only teams you mentioned is Aston Martin to have improved. I'm not quite sure what to make of that.
And I really have to say, I was very impressed with Lance Stroll. I know that in our side conversations, I always have been sometimes critical of Lance Stroll, but I thought he did a really good job of, especially coming back from that bicycle accident, of which I am familiar coming back from bicycle accidents. And he put in a pretty great showing, given that Fernando had, what, three or four testing sessions in that car already, and Lance pretty much is just jumping right in. I know he did sim sessions, but that's not the same.
Driving around in a sim racer is not the same as driving around in a real car. Especially when you've got your wrists and they're broken and you can't bend them. I thought that was very impressive. I totally agree. I was surprised that he didn't flake out halfway through the race, because I know that I would have flaked out halfway through the race if I'd just broken my wrists and my toe, because apparently he broke his toe.
Yeah, and from what I hear, breaking in those Formula One cars is not easy.
No, it is not. I was actually listening to a podcast the other day, that another podcast, I can't remember what it was called, where they pointed out that the amount of pressure you put through the pedal is, in fact, not really, you don't force the pressure on the pedal through your legs and your feet. You just stand on it and use your body weight to press the pedal, which I thought was an interesting take, which is maybe how he was able to pull it off.
There you go.
Yeah.
All right, so what are your takes from takeaways from Bahrain?
As I mentioned, I don't think it was a race that was different from any from last year. It's just a continuation, which in some respects I was kind of disappointed at. I do wonder whether Aston Martin should continue their moniker from 2020 of Tracing Point. Did they just have James Fallow walk in and look at the car? And he was apparently making funny comments last year, like going, yes, about the car, because he wasn't allowed to say anything because he was still under contract to Red Bull. And that, in fact, it's just a copy of a Red Bull, which leads to the question, what happens next year when do they develop the car, or does the car remain as it is and they end up with the same problems that they had in 2021? They didn't understand the 2019 mark, and so it broke when everything changed.
Yeah, that's a very good point. You know, I saw an article about that today, and I was looking into it, and it does seem a bit like, yeah, they were definitely chasing the Red Bull, and they did a good job chasing the Red Bull. But I think the difference between the Tracing Point and the green Red Bull, I guess,
the green monster,
sugarless Red Bull,
sugarless Red Bull, perfect.
Would be that, like, in this case, they actually have somebody who was involved in the design and aerodynamics of the car. So I think they would have a little bit more understanding of this than maybe they did of the Tracades in 2020.
That is an excellent point. Which brings me on to some other questions, other pontifications and ruminations. I wonder whether Lewis has given up. It was an interesting race to watch him kind of try against Alonso, but ultimately not. I mean, maybe he couldn't, but it felt like he didn't try, and I wonder if he's either done and he's just counting down his days, or whether the fact is that if he has a crappy car, it's not that he can't drive it, he's just not motivated to drive it.
Yeah, I think that's also one of the things of how much is Lewis already thinking about the development race, and is it better to fight Alonso when he is clearly on a day, or do you want to maintain the steady pace and get the data to help your CFD, where your CFD trends might be very far off?
That I just can't tell. He just actually fought Alonso. He seemed to give him some time and energy and dragged him in. But with Sainz, I just didn't see that. I felt like he'd given up. And I felt he was so close to having Sainz that he could have done it. And maybe this is the difference between a seven-time world champion who knows the time to give up. Because I'd have been like, I can get him. I can have that endorphin high, that success that can make me feel more confident in my car. But maybe he doesn't need to. I don't know.
And we didn't have a Lewis radio message about his tires, so who knows how great those tires were at that point in time.
That's a good point, which brings to the interesting question of Russell pushing so hard out of the gate. He was on the radio and complaining to his engineers, like, is Lewis struggling, or is he just, you know, tire managing? And at first, well, hang on, I can see you taking a moment there, and I need to finish my bit. The question is that Russell pushed really hard and he was really getting on the back of Lewis and then suddenly dropped off. And it wasn't like it was the fact that he'd been told to back off, because he then backed off and continued to drift down the field and got overtaken while Lewis kind of maintained that pace. And it just felt like he was being bright-eyed and bushy-tailed as the bright young thing and chewing through his tires in a car that, according to Lewis, chews through its tires. It felt like there was a bit of green behind the ears there.
Yeah, I mean, that might go back to your previous point of, has Lewis given up, or is Lewis just a seven-time world champion who's playing three-dimensional chess while George is playing checkers? Like, you know, George being one of those, oh, I can go faster than Lewis. Well, can you over the course of a stint, or can you for the next lap, and then you're nowhere? And, you know, yeah, they didn't really give Lewis the... They didn't give Lewis the hurry-up, and Lewis just kept pulling away. I was surprised. I thought they were going to pit Russell before Lewis at the end of the first stint.
I too thought that, especially considering he was whining on the radio. But then I remembered the Mercedes policy, which stands in almost all situations, which is the first car gets first dibs, and Lewis was in front, and so he came in first and did what he needed to do. And then they did Russell a solid by screwing up his tire change. But, you know, what do you expect? It's in Bahrain. Would we expect anything else?
Yeah.
Which then brings me on to how I thought about the rookies. I thought the rookies were fine. There was a lot of people on the internet and on the show saying that maybe the McLaren, for example, had done Danny a badness, because it showed that the car was Norris's. But at the same time, it was his first race. By Oscar's own admission, it's the first time he'd actually raced anywhere in any real form for a year. Like, since he'd finished in 2021, he'd had no track time to race. He'd had some track time in the car, but not to race. And I think that makes a huge difference. Plus, it's his
That's
first
true.
Time in Formula One.
You got to get that racing form back.
Yeah, I thought the Hulk hulked it, which is he bent it and everything was disaster after that. which I thought was amusing. He was doing quite good at first, but I don't know whether that was luck or whether he was driving well.
He did make Magnussen look like Schumacher in quali.
Yeah.
That would be Mick, not Michael.
Yeah, I do always wonder when you get the first time out in the car, especially if you have experience, you can overperform, and it'll be interesting to see what happens in the next few races. Like, I think Saudi could be really interesting, because I think that's a very challenging circuit. You've got, it's basically in Monaco, but faster, and equally boring. But it'll be interesting to see how that pans out.
I also like how you're still referring to Hülkenberg as a rookie, if anything, the most un-rookie on the grid.
True, but you know, you leave and you come back and you get to be called a rookie again. You get to participate in the Young Driver program, just like the rookie that was Alonso. He's had 2 years in it. We can't call him a rookie anymore. But you know, that's what we've got to call him. I thought the standout performance actually was, at least so far, is Sargeant. I was not expecting him to perform very well. I don't know whether that's because the Williams has made a step forward and therefore it's easier to drive, or whether, in actual fact, Latifi was absolutely terrible, because I don't think Latifi was anywhere near as close to Albon at all last year, and first race of the season, and he's out there and he's doing okay.
Just real quick on our previous point, Hülkenberg is the third oldest driver on the grid.
Third oldest? Who's the second? Lewis?
Lewis.
Okay.
And then, of course, Lord of the Eyebrows, Fernando Alonso himself is number
indeed
one.
The Giga Chad. Yeah, so I thought it was interesting to see people out. It was a good race, but I felt it was just a continuation of last year.
Yeah, well, if it was a continuation from last year, I think definitely the back half of the grid does not look the same with... well, granted, McLaren looked the same in Bahrain last year as they did this year, pretty much nowhere. Yeah, so but at least by the end of the season last year, they were competitive, and they're back to not being competitive again. So with that being said, what are some of your takes for where the season is headed? For the offseason, from the offseason as well.
I thought from the offseason there's some interesting spicy rumors. We have Jos Capito, who left from Williams. Nobody thought that was a surprise. But if you remember back to early in 2022, there were strong rumors that Williams was considering switching to Red Bull powertrains. So clearly in this case, this was a knife job by Toto to make sure he didn't lose a team. And so he had Jos Capito taken out and then instilled his own commander, James Vowles, to take over the position and make sure that they stay with Mercedes. But it seems like he's missed Zak Brown, because if Zak Brown gets taken out back because he's doing so bad, I don't know, maybe that's another risk. Because there was a rumor they were going to go to Red Bull powertrains over the break, which I thought was a bit messy.
Well, then there's the real question, is Toto going to let Aston stay with Red Bull powertrains, or not Red Bull, Merck powertrains?
You can't say no, because at the end of the day, it's still good PR. You saw the quotes where they were like, they're using our suspension, rear suspension, our gearbox, and our engine, and our car isn't as good. So, you know, they're still pulling on the strings of rewards. I still wonder whether Toto's going to excise, if he still has it, the rights to purchase part of the team and then live in glory with another team that wins.
Or will he move to the FIA rules committee and rig the rules in such a way that are in favor of his former team?
You never know with these things.
Nobody's ever done that before.
I have never idea. That's why it's called Mafia. It's Mercedes International something something assistance. It's not Ferrari International assistance.
Not these days.
No, not these days. What are those spicy takes that I got on my list? I have the spicy take that Russell has felt inferior to Hamilton for the last season and copied his helmet, because they've now got the same colour helmet, except one's got the Pride logo on it and the other one hasn't. Like, why would you do that? On top of that, because he has such an inferiority complex, he has spent the last 5 years slowly but carefully tuning the Mercedes engine and the Mercedes team to build a car that suited to him, because he's driving it better in qualifying and he's been able to get more pace out of it than Mr. Hamilton, to the point that he's taking out Hamilton slowly but surely by making him have a crap car. It's the whole plan. He's been planning this since he signed with Mercedes, like, you know, 10 years ago. It's coming to fruition.
I'll agree with half of that, because I think Russell could definitely feel inferior to Hamilton. And the copying of the helmet design might be great, especially because he was higher than Hamilton in the standings last year, wasn't he?
He
had the only Merck win of that year, ruining Lewis's streak.
Indeed. So, it's a PSYOPs game.
However, I think Hamilton is the wise old monk of well, we'll see. And he's been ingrained in that team for a while. That I think if you were going to start divvying up the people back at the factory, I think more of them are going to be in Lewis's corner than the shirtless wonder's corner.
The shirtless wonder. But you see, you're missing the key point, which is that because Aston Martin is now successful and Mercedes has a shoe in with Aston Martin, what's going to happen is they're not going to renew Lewis's contract. Lewis is going to end up back at Aston Martin when they kick Stroll out because Stroll won't perform this year. And then we will have the battle we have been waiting for 14 years, which is Fernando Alonso and Lewis Hamilton in the same car that's competitive. And we can have a repeat of 2007 and see who's really going to win.
The other possibility there is Fernando Alonso is dropped and Lewis is brought in as the next world champion mentor for Lance Stroll.
You mean the slightly washed up world champion mentor for Lanston and hope to make him win.
Yes. And however, that brings me onto a bit of a spicy hot take. I think Lance Stroll will be the top Aston Martin driver of 2023.
You do? You think he's going to outperform Alonso?
I mean, he wasn't that far off the pace in Bahrain with two broken wrists and no time in the car.
And a broken toe. Don't forget the
broken toe. Let's not forget the broken toe.
I can see that happening, but the question is do we think Lance will be able to develop at a faster rate than Alonso will be able to develop? And I think, as much as I think Alonso is a suspicious character at best, I think he is a very capable driver. And I do wonder whether he'll be able to outperform Lance in terms of growth.
My absolute other, that's the exact opposite take, is that this is also a make-or-break season for Lance, because if Aston Martin truly has made the leap forward and Lance can't hold the pace, does Lawrence value winning or his son having a drive? And I think when push comes to shove, it's going to be, we can put somebody else in the car who, you know, could possibly get the World Drivers or World Constructors Championship for Aston Martin.
Oh, without question, Lawrence would throw his child under the bus at the first opportunity if it meant that he could maintain the sales of his Aston Martin cars.
Their stock price is up today.
Well, as a side note, it turns out that a bunch of car reviews came out last week for the new Aston Martin SUV, and they were all very good, saying it's a very good, very fancy SUV, which will now become the new medical car. So maybe finally the, you know, hundreds of millions of pounds that he's poured into his magical new factory is actually starting to pay off, which is going to be a first ever in Formula One investment, because that's not how it works. It doesn't matter how much money you put in, you need the genius to come make your car fly.
Well, just because he put all the money in doesn't mean he's going to get all the money back.
It's just, as long as he gets that, as long as he doesn't care about the money, he writes that off. It's a tax write-off. He just needs the World Drivers' Championship is all that matters.
All right, you got any other spicy takes?
I don't have any spicy takes. I do have a very implausible but crazy prediction, which maybe one would call that a spicy hot take. And that is, in a kind of semi-serious note, I think Zak Brown is going to be out before the summer break, or maybe during the summer break. I think his shenanigans with collecting drivers and then apparently being unable to develop the car for 2 years in a row. Last year we had the brake problem, which took them forever to sort out, right? I mean, if you remember in testing before their brakes fell apart, last year was like, they're going to be amazing. And then it turns out they didn't have the pace. And then this year they've come out and they've admitted it already that they didn't have the pace. And this is what, year five of the Zak Brown experience? And he hasn't turned that team around. Like, the luck that they had in 2020 really was a byproduct of, turns out, two great drivers, Carlos Sainz and Lando Norris. But he's not performing. What happens the end of this year, by halfway through this year? He turned down all that money for, like, the selling half the team to whoever it was. Then he turned down the money from Audi, and now he's going to make the car not perform well? I don't know. I feel like there's a good chance he could be out before the summer break.
Is there a chance that Zak Brown's job could be saved by IndyCar? As in, if they win, say, the Indianapolis 500, do you think McLaren still goes through and looks for a replacement?
No,
because at least then they have some racing success in arguably a market they care about growing.
I think you're right there. I think that could save him. I think that is definitely possible. I do wonder what that means in the context of their Formula E, because I suspect that costs a lot of money, but doesn't give them the performance they want. But that's an interesting spicy take that IndyCar saved them.
I'm looking to see the IndyCar results from the weekend. They Patty O'Ward was second in IndyCar at St. Petersburg.
Is that not because all of the other cars that could have been competitive crashed out?
I mean, that's just IndyCar as a whole. But you got Aero McLaren with Patty O'Ward in second and Alexander Rossi in fourth. So they got they're up there.
Yeah, that's not bad at all.
Yeah. So if anything, I think IndyCar will save Zach Brown's job.
But will it save McLaren in Formula One?
Maybe. I think that might be. Andre Seidel moved on, didn't he?
He did. He went to Audi/Sauber, depending on what you want to call it this week.
I mean, if anything, there's your scapegoat for at least a year of. True. Well, we had Seidel and he's gone.
True.
And he's gone. So you know, if anything, the new Andrea Stella will be our next scapegoat before we move too far on.
He collects drivers and he collects teams' principals with the same name, because when he fires them, he doesn't have to learn a new name. Who knows? I would say this potential would be that Porsche would swoop in and choose to purchase McLaren if it were not for the fact that McLaren owns a premium sports car brand, and I don't think that you can separate the premium sports car brand from the McLaren F1 team, not necessarily financially, but from a brand perspective, without making a horrible mess. And I think that Porsche would want to stay away from that train wreck.
Yeah, that would make total sense. And that would just make me sad also. I like the legacy teams, as it were. You know, your McLarens, your Williams, and I want to see them keep going.
Is Ferrari a legacy team?
Yeah, according to the money they get from Formula One, they're definitely a legacy team.
Do they perform like a legacy team? I say yes, because they don't seem to be able to capitalize on the capabilities that they have.
They perform like a legacy team in the fact that everybody's remembering their results from way back when, and they haven't done anything to say of note recently. I'd say after Bahrain, a spicy take I have, I think Mercedes is in line to finish fourth in the constructors. That might not be that spicy, but I think that's where they're headed.
I think that's distinctly possible. But that brings back to the early spicy take of, are they going to tank the season and fully intentionally and decide that that's the only path forward, is that they need more aero time? I do wonder whether they could be very, very smart and decide that they really do want to throw away the entire season and instead use all that track time that they have to not just wind tunnel it, not just CFD it, but go run new bits of the car on track during free practice, qualifying, and even the race, accepting that it doesn't matter where they come in the results, but they get that effective, you know, an extra 100% wind tunnel time by running it on the track. Maybe that's the right way that they can solve their problem, rather than waiting for the whole season to go through pretending to try and compete and then try and get it right next year. I mean,
and it also gives them a lot of runs to improve their CFD.
Exactly.
I
firmly believe that that's the mistake that they've had. After last year's disaster and the way that it bounced like a pogo stick, when they were totally unexpecting, they were not expecting that to happen, I'm convinced that their whole problem, it's the same problem that Ferrari had like 3 years ago, which is that there was no correlation between the simulation, the wind tunnel, and the track. And that they, at some point, somehow screwed that up. Or the theory I had the other day in the shower was that the software and the sim and the whatever it is that they run was broken for years, like for a decade. But it was broken in a way that gave them the advantage for the old style aerodynamics. But since the aerodynamics have now changed to much more complex and more nuanced CFD, that system has now exposed all of its weaknesses. And what they needed to do is take that out back, set fire to it, and start again. But at that point, you're talking like a 5+ year path forward. And I don't know if they can do that. I don't know if Toto can deal with that. I'm not even sure Mercedes would be willing to deal with that brand damage. But I think that's their problem.
There's your Porsche buyer right there.
I have also considered that for a number of occasions, that it would be absolutely spot on for, I mean, putting aside patents and problems, but Porsche to purchase Mercedes HPP and Mercedes the team and bring in the continued German ethos and all of that stuff. It probably works already. That's a really interesting, spicy hot take. And then Lewis and Toto can ride off into the sunset in their fabulous Monaco home.
Yeah, speaking of CFD and tunnel time, I wouldn't be surprised if Red Bull has already burned through a majority of theirs.
Well, you know, remember, they've got less, too. They have, like, whatever it is, 20% less.
And if I'm Red Bull, I'm thinking, well, you know, we were the number one team last year, so we have the least amount of CFD time. We had some questionable budgeting, so we also have less CFD tunnel time because of our questionable budgeting. So as a result, if I'm Red Bull, I'm going to gain as much of an advantage as I can using my CFD and tunnel time during the off season, and then I'm going to use all these free practice runnings I can to test anything else that I might come up with.
See, I think that is exactly right. That's how teams need to be using that free practice time, especially when they're in, for want of a better word, a sticky situation. You're either a sticky situation in that you're so successful than everybody else that you've got nothing left to do, or you're in a sticky situation where your car is so bad that you know you can't rectify it, and so you've just got to keep going forward and leveraging and abusing it in ways that make more sense.
Yeah, and with how quick that Red Bull is looking, like they can throw away an FP session to test some new bits and still rock up ready for quali, good to go.
Yeah, it's gonna be really interesting to see how it performs on different tracks, because I think that was one of the surprises, I think, last year, is that it was not dominant at every track. There were tracks where it clearly wasn't as successful. It wasn't that it wasn't winning, but it wasn't dominant, and it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
I mean, George Russell might have had the spiciest hot take of all of us when he said Red Bull's going to win 23 of 23.
Oh, that would be so bad for F1, but it would also be hilarious for the record books. 23 out of 23, it would beat the, whatever it is, the McLaren MP...
4-4?
Yeah, the 4-4 that was like 11 out of 14 races or whatever. Yeah.
Oh, I thought it was better than that. I thought it was like 13 of 14.
It maybe it was. I think it missed by two. It was something. Maybe it was that it was the non contiguous. Like it was 11, but they didn't win 11 in a row, or they won 13. I can't remember.
16 races, 15 wins.
Oh, so close, but yet so far.
It was Monza where they lost it.
Oh, that's interesting, because you'd have thought that if you can win at Spa, you can win at Monza.
Let's see. Hmm. Prost retired with an engine. Where's Senna? Senna retired with a collision. Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Typical Senna.
All right, Dominic, before we finish up, I think we should look at Jeddah just for a little bit. And I think I got two takes for you. I would not be surprised at all if Charles Leclerc is going to take a power store, energy system store, energy store, that's it. He's going to take an energy store penalty given the two issues he had over the weekend. So I think we could see our first engine component penalty of the 2023 season.
I will subscribe to that.
And I'll say we will have our second race without a safety car.
Now, of course, there was no safety car. I'd forgotten that. You know, that is a bold prediction for Jeddah. But
yeah,
I'm not going to subscribe to that theory, but I'm willing to read a free newsletter on it.
Well, how about a free podcast on it?
Free podcast. This podcast is free. Can't promise it will always remain free, but it's free for now.
Well, thank you for listening to our inaugural episode of Tinfoil Helmets. If it's not apparent, Dominic and I have no idea what we're doing, but we thought it might be fun to give it a try. So if you have any feedback for us, please feel free to send us an email at feedback@tinfoilhelmets.com. Or if you have your own spicy takes you want us to discuss in our next podcast, send them there as well. We'll be back maybe before Jeddah, if not definitely after Jeddah, to wrap up all the craziness that happens there.